general state of confusion in Beijing about whether the situation between the United States and China will improve or can improve.
It could be one of the most important problems facing the U.S. president-elect. This is Wednesday, December 2nd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, Australia is having its own problems with China. California's governor describes his state as being at a tipping point in the COVID-19 pandemic. And there's a report that claims China has given the North Korean leader some of its own medicine. That and more on today's VOA Asia. Chinese President Xi Jinping has congratulated President-elect Joe Biden for winning the November 3rd U.S. presidential election. She expressed hope for improved relations between the two countries, according to the official Xinhua news agency. But who does China really prefer, Biden or Trump? We welcome to VOA Asia Oriana Schuyler Mastro. She is an international security expert at Stanford University in California and the American Enterprise Institute in Washington, with a focus on Chinese military and security policy issues. She joins us via Skype from Sydney, Australia. Oriana, I'll start with that question. Who does China prefer, Biden or Trump?
Well, I think what you're seeing is a number of opinions across the board because there's a general state of confusion in Beijing about whether the situation between the United States and China will improve or can improve. Was the past few years just an anomaly because of President Trump? Or do we now see this feeling of competition and unhappiness on the U.S. part about the relationship that's more systemic and will continue throughout a Biden administration as well?
So as far as a percentage is concerned, what do you think? Who for Biden, who for the possibility of Trump, which he is still holding open, obviously. So,
I think probably the Chinese government and the Chinese people prefer President-elect Biden for a number of reasons. I think one of the largest ones is a degree of predictability. Even if the situation continues to be tense, I think they can better predict what President-elect Biden will do. And more as tensions increase across the strait, there is a concern that President Trump is being reckless about his policy towards Taiwan, which of course is of primary concern to the Chinese Communist Party.
Do you see that as a major hotspot coming up?
I think it is a major hotspot because both the United States and China have artificially created this crisis across the strait. I mean, nothing has really changed in anyone's policies. Beijing reserves the right to use force, as they always have. The United States will defend Taiwan if attacked, which it has always been the U.S. position. But right now, because of insecurities and problems overall in the relationship, I think both sides are concerned. The other side wants to change the status quo, and that's why we currently find ourselves in a bit of a crisis.
What about trade? I mean, one of the biggest areas that Donald Trump has affected the relationship between the U.S. and China has been obviously in trade. Where do you see that going?
I think President-elect Biden's approach to the competition is going to be fundamentally different than that of President Trump. Specifically, he has articulated the desire to leverage allies and partnerships, become more active in international institutions. What all of this points to is the desire to have a broader free trade agreement with the region as a whole, perhaps not exactly TPP, but something like that. So at the very least, there's going to be pressure on China, if not directly and bilaterally from the United States, which will continue, whether it's in trade or control of technology transfers, et cetera, et cetera. But you'll also see the United States improving its economic position overall in the region, which will make it more difficult for Beijing to use those tools of coercion against countries in the future.
What about the other hotspots? South China Sea and a relatively new one, and that is China apparently building some kind of communities along the Indian-Chinese border.
The South China Sea is really the center of U.S.-China great power competition. President Trump has been more active militarily in the South China Sea, and I think that was the right policy to try to deter China from further militarization and from trying to control those waters. I hope that President-elect Biden is going to continue those policies of maintaining an active U.S. military presence there and to support other claimants in other countries in pursuing a resolution to the South China Sea disputes in a peaceful manner. The Sino-Indian border is very surprising. I don't really know why China wants to antagonize India at this time. Perhaps if you look at past border disputes, China has done this as a way to warn a country not to get too close to an outside power, right? This is how they warned Vietnam in 1979. This is how they warned India in 1962. So I think they might be becoming more aggressive and more active, and India has to keep its eye on this as a way of warning India against its cozying up to the United States.
Do you think Xi Jinping, the Chinese president, will have to or want to change his positions on certain situations and certain predicaments with President Biden?
He's not going to change any of the core positions on territorial disputes, for example, or on any internal issues, whether it be Hong Kong or Xinjiang. I hope that he changes his approach, however, to how China is trying to secure what it sees in its national interests. If he does not, and instead continues along this more aggressive path, I think he'll be missing out on a key opportunity to set U.S.-China relations on a better path.
Oriana Skyler-Mastro is an international security expert at Stanford University and the American Enterprise Institute. Thanks so much for joining us. We invite you to read more on our top stories by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We are also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find at voanews.com. The U.S. accuses China of flagrant North Korea violations, offering $5 million for information about sanction evasions. An intense heat wave returned to the south and east of Australia Tuesday, the first day of the Southern Hemisphere summer. An inmate protest about the growing number of COVID-19 infections at a prison in Sri Lanka turns into a riot, killing at least eight. Russia deploys advanced S-300 missiles to disputed islands near Japan. India says it may not need to vaccinate its entire population to control COVID. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. This is VOA Asia. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison is demanding the Chinese government delete what he calls a repugnant tweet of alleged war crimes in Afghanistan. The doctored image appears to show an Australian soldier murdering a child. It was shared by China's Ministry of Foreign Affairs and follows a report last week that found Australian Special Forces had committed at least 39 unlawful killings in Afghanistan. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The image is confronting. It was posted by a Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman, Lian Zhao, and shows a doctored image, which portrayed an Australian soldier with a bloody knife next to a child. The child is seen holding a lamb. The text beneath the photo reads, "Don't be afraid, we're coming to bring you peace." Australian media reported the Twitter post appeared to be a reference to unsubstantiated rumours that elite Australian soldiers used knives to murder two Afghan teenagers. An inquiry into misconduct by special forces found no evidence to support the hearsay. It did, however, find credible evidence of unlawful killings by Australian forces in Afghanistan between 2005 and 2016. Last week, Zhao said China strongly condemned the soldiers' actions and that the four-year inquiry fully exposed the hypocrisy of the human rights and freedom these Western countries are always chanting. The fake picture posted online has infuriated Australia. Prime Minister Scott Morrison.
The Chinese government should be totally ashamed of this post. It diminishes them in the world's eyes. Australia is seeking an apology from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs from the Chinese government for this outrageous post. We are also seeking its removal immediately and have also contacted Twitter to take it down immediately. It is a false image and a terrible slur.
Relations between the two nations were already frosty over allegations of Chinese interference in Australia's domestic affairs, cyber espionage, and differing views on Beijing's military expansion in the South China Sea and democracy in Hong Kong. Canberra's call for a global investigation into the origins of the new coronavirus, which was first detected in China, angered the Chinese government. It insisted Australia was unfairly targeting China. China now appears to be using trade to pressure Australia. Last week, Beijing announced sweeping tariffs on Australian wine exports, which are likely to inflict huge losses on parts of the industry. China has also imposed restrictions on other agricultural commodities and coal from Australia. Analysts say the dispute over a fake photo posted by a Chinese official on Twitter will only inflame tensions further. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Wednesday, China's embassy in Australia said politicians there had misread the tweet showing a digitally altered image of an Australian soldier holding a bloodied knife to the throat of an Afghan child and were trying to stoke nationalism. Happening now in Asia, South Korea's parliament Tuesday passed a bill to allow globally recognized K-pop artists such as BTS to postpone their mandatory military service to age 30. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. The United Nations is appealing for a record $35 billion to provide a humanitarian lifeline to 165 million of the world's most vulnerable, needy people in 56 countries in crisis. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN Humanitarian Chief Mark Lowcock calls the crisis gripping the world one of the bleakest and darkest ever experienced by a huge slice of humanity.
That is a reflection of the fact that the COVID pandemic has wreaked carnage across the whole of the most fragile and vulnerable countries on the planet, those where humanitarian organizations are most involved in their day-to-day work.
Lowcock says this disaster comes on top of escalating and protracted conflicts and increasing extreme weather events, including storms, floods, and drought due to climate change.
Those two things together now with disease outbreak, are what has caused this huge increase over recent years in the number of people who may not survive in the absence of humanitarian assistance.
The United Nations reports 235 million people globally will need humanitarian assistance and protection in 2021. This is an increase of 40% in 1 year. This past year has been particularly difficult. The number of people displaced by conflict in 2020, both as refugees and internally displaced, has reached a record high of 85 million. UN agencies report extreme hunger is surging globally, with several countries and areas on the brink of famine. Four that are most at risk include Yemen, Burkina Faso, South Sudan, and northern Nigeria. Lowcock says the COVID-19 crisis has plunged millions of people into poverty and sent humanitarian needs skyrocketing. While the rich world can see the light at the end of the tunnel, he says the same cannot be said for the poorest countries. He is appealing to the humanity and generosity of international donors to safeguard the lives of those who cannot fend for themselves. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. A Hong Kong television station said on Tuesday about 100 staff were affected by a shakeup as it seeks to remain competitive in a challenging economic environment, a move that has reignited worries over media freedom in China's freest city. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As it has for months, the U.S. continues to lead the world in coronavirus infections with more than 13.5 million of the world's 63.3 million cases. Over 268,000 people have died of COVID-19 in the U.S., more than any other country, according to Johns Hopkins, which reports 1.47 million deaths worldwide. California's Governor Gavin Newsom describes his state as being at a tipping point in the COVID-19 pandemic that would soon overwhelm hospitals as political leaders nationwide struggle to hold back the latest surge. Gloria Tso reports.
As COVID-19 rages across the United States, overwhelming hospitals and pushing medical staff to a breaking point, the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, issued a stark warning for his state's hospitals on Monday. Intensive care units there are on track to exceed capacity by mid-December. Newsom also said he may impose tougher restrictions over the next 2 days, including a possible stay-at-home order.
We are showing hospitalizations that without any additional interventions, change of behavior, or fundamental shifts in the way we are conducting ourselves as individuals in this state, that we could see an increase just in hospitalizations. They're 2 to 3 times greater than the current census in just one calendar month.
Nearly 93,000 Americans are currently hospitalized with COVID-19. That's up 11% from last week and double the number reported a month ago, according to a Reuters analysis of state and county public health reports. Experts worry that number will only keep rising as the weather gets colder and people gather indoors more often.
In the new battlefield, hospital capacity is the top concern.
On the other side of the country, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo on Monday ordered all elective surgeries to cease in one county and urged hospitals statewide to again ready their plans to increase capacity by 50% if necessary or set up field hospitals.
It's about hospital beds, it's about ICU, and it's about having enough staff and enough equipment. The small gathering spread is now the number one spreader, about 65% of all cases. This is a dramatic shift.
In the absence of a federal blueprint to curb the spread of the virus, more than 20 U.S. states have issued new or revamped restrictions on businesses and social life. U.S. officials pleaded with Americans ahead of the long Thanksgiving weekend to avoid holiday travel and limit social gatherings. But many appear to have disregarded those pleas. The Transportation Security Administration screened more than 1 million airline passengers on Sunday, the highest since mid-March.
Reuters' Gloria Tso reporting.
How to stay healthy. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses.
Thanks for being with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. China has provided North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and his family with an experimental coronavirus vaccine, according to a U.S. analyst, citing two unidentified Japanese intelligence sources. Harry Kasianis, a North Korea expert at the Center for the National Interest think tank in Washington, said the Kims and several senior North Korean officials had been vaccinated. Harry Kasianis joins us now on VOA Asia. Harry, tell us more.
According to two Japanese intelligence sources I spoke with recently, Kim Jong-un has been apparently been provided a Chinese vaccine candidate, as it has been referred to hopefully inoculate him, members of his senior leadership entourage, and members of his family from coronavirus. What makes this very interesting is that the various Chinese vaccine candidates that are out there are basically in a trial stage, meaning they are not, at least according to, you know, past experiences of vaccines that have taken years to develop, you know, not at the fully vetted stage that maybe the, you know, the CDC or FDA or other groups would have it, you know, be available. So it's a pretty important development. But I think the biggest thing it points to is the fear that Kim Jong-un has due to being, you know, impacted by coronavirus. I mean, since January, North Korea has cut itself out, off from the outside world, which is a really tough thing to do considering that, you know, they were under the maximum pressure sanctions campaign. Their economy was already in depression because of that. They have food insecurity issues. They've been walloped by three typhoons this year. So coronavirus is essentially the perfect storm for North Korea. And it's something I think they're trying to navigate to better waters. And we'll have to see how that goes.
You're receiving some blowback on this, if I'm reading it correctly, saying that the Kim Jong-un and his family would not allow themselves to be subject to this.
Well, I think the thing is that, first of all, you have to look at it from Kim Jong-un's perspective. The North Korean medical system is not like the United States or South Korea or Japan. It's third or fourth world at best. I mean, certainly Kim Jong-un and his family would get the absolute best care. But even under those circumstances, that care would not be like a top tier US or even Chinese facility. So I think for Kim, this is one of those situations where you have to weigh the risks versus the reward. When I got this information, the first thing that I did was I wanted to talk to virologists. I wanted to talk to medical experts who are people who are actually working on the U.S. response to the coronavirus. And the first thing I asked was, you know, if Kim did take a vaccine like this that is, you know, that hasn't had even the third phase trial published, which nobody in China has done yet, you know, what are the risks to him and his family? And the big thing I asked was, you know, would this protect him? You know, a lot of experts said they weren't sure because, of course, they don't have the data. They're not able to, you know, validate those claims or not. But the one thing I asked was, as if, you know, he was inoculated, what if he did come in contact with coronavirus? Would the immune system response be good enough? And some experts were pretty optimistic. One actually pointed to the fact that China creates 5 billion doses of vaccine per year, and they're actually the world's biggest vaccine producer. So that I thought was an encouraging sign that the Chinese would be able to produce this type of vaccine. But there is some unknowns here. I mean, I think that's a very honest claim. One thing that I wanted to really study in the piece was, could Kim actually be revaccinated if, let's say, this, you know, Chinese candidate wasn't up to par with, say, U.S. or European vaccine candidates? And there was some, you know, a lot of experts I spoke with weren't exactly sure. One that I actually put in the piece felt that they could be revaccinated, and that the worst case scenario was if Kim did come in contact with coronavirus, what could happen is his immune system response might not be as strong as, say, maybe the AstraZeneca version or something like that.
Harry Kazianis, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, sir.
VOA Asia continues. Universal Studios Japan will open its new Nintendo-themed area on February 4th, the Osaka-based theme park said on Monday, after pushing back the opening from the summer due to the coronavirus outbreak. Maha Albadrawi reports.
Here we go!
If you've ever wanted to immerse yourself in the world of Mario, Yoshi, and Princess Peach, you're in luck. The Nintendo theme park in Osaka is finally set to open on February 4, according to Universal Studios Japan. The area will feature Mario Kart races, attractions based on Nintendo games, as well as restaurants and gift shops. Executive producer at Universal Creative, Thomas Garrity, also revealed details on augmented reality features.
Guests boarding the ride will wear this augmented reality headset created by Universal's ATI group internally to meet the needs of the attraction. And this will immerse the guests in the world of Nintendo, where they ride right alongside of Mario, Peach, and Bowser.
Super Nintendo World was originally set to open in time for the 2020 Tokyo Olympic Games, but like the Olympics and many other events, was delayed earlier this year.
That's Maha Albadrawi reporting. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Please enjoy your day and stay safe.